I probably should say I feel a little bit like an imposter here because I'm really not coming from an educational studies background at all. I'm coming from a media studies background, and I'm looking in my work very much at some of the connections between that as well and some of the economics of these user-led spaces that we've just seen really well demonstrated there, and some of the issues really, some of the issues obviously, the topics that were listed there that we might need to rethink. And notice that education wasn't in there actually, which is interesting, and I think quite an aspect to have been overlooked in this environment. So here really what I want to do is to look a little bit more at how all of this might actually affect education itself. And I start obviously from the premise that there is something that we might start to call a user-led age perhaps that's emerging now, away from the age of industrial production and towards the age of, well, informational production perhaps, but perhaps there's actually even something else going on that can't really be described traditionally as production anymore in the way that we have perhaps for the last 50 years or so. Now, my two really key questions, I guess, in this are, on the one hand, how do we prepare our graduates, of course, to be expert participants, perhaps, in this user-led environment? How do we prepare them just to really take all of this information in the first place and work with it and understand it and understand perhaps how it's emerged and what the good and bad parts about it are perhaps, but also beyond that, how do we enable them perhaps to be active participants, active content creators, active leaders within this environment? If it's user-led, then hopefully many of our graduates will be some of the leaders within these environments as well. So there's on the one hand the engagement with the content that's been created there, but there's also the engagement with the spaces themselves and the active participation and creation of content, of course. So there's two very much related but slightly different aspects, I think, that education will increasingly have to address beyond what it is already doing and beyond, I think, some of the approaches that it already has towards these kinds of spaces. But I think, I mean, the video just now just set me up really quite well because a number of these spaces already appeared there. Here's really some of the areas where I see this user-led content creation happen very strongly, and there's sort of not quite a kind of a historical order there, perhaps. A lot of this really started, I guess, with open source software. That's one of the most developed areas, of course, where there is user-led content development, user-led production, if you like, for want of a better word, that is going on there and has by now become quite a major industry already as well. We're seeing it already in areas like online publishing, where, for example, traditional journalism is now increasingly under threat from citizen journalists and others who are starting to provide an alternative to the mainstream media, the MSM, as the bloggers call them. And we're seeing there are a number of clear leaders for this, places like Slashdot and Online News and Career and so on. We're seeing also, of course, the rise of the Wikipedia as a resource, for better or for worse to some extent, but certainly as a massive resource which is very rapidly now undermining the business model of the traditional encyclopedias from Britannica to Encarta. And of course other forms of knowledge management, whether that happens in sites like Delicious as sharing of tags, sharing of links to particularly interesting sites, or the sort of geotagging that we're now seeing in places like Google Earth and Frapper, where people are actually annotating, well, a map of the world ultimately with the local knowledge that they have or beliefs they have about this. So these are all user-led spaces. The content creation in these spaces is all user-led. And we're seeing it, of course, also in areas like online gaming. I mean, we've had a lot of talk already about Second Life, and in gaming, of course, there's a shift now from games producers actually providing the narrative that you play to providing the space within which you create your own narrative. You play your own game, you choose, you make up your own rules, essentially, within certain limits. And we're seeing it in other areas where perhaps we're not quite clear yet where it all will go, and where some of the practices that do exist right now are still very much based on the exchange of copyrighted material without permission. Sites like Flickr and YouTube and others, we're seeing some user-led work going on there, but it's not quite clear yet what the legalities of these are and exactly where that will take us. It's interesting, actually, I've been watching a little bit of Sky News in the hotel, and there are now ads for the UK version of Current TV, which is coming to Sky, apparently, on Channel 22. So there is, you know, that rise of Current TV, the Al Gore-supported channel of user-led media, TV channel of user-led media products, basically, that is now also coming to the UK. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. There are a number of others. There are also some areas, of course, where in fact what's happening is user-led, like Google, which crawls the web and identifies the links that are being made, and from that outlines, from that finds what seem to be the hottest sites on the web on particular topics. Like Amazon, which tracks people's movements across the site, and from that creates, of course, the listings that say, if you like this book, you'll also like these other books. So that's, in a sense, the content that's being created there is also user-led, although the users don't necessarily get involved directly and don't necessarily know that they're actually creating these links for the benefit of these commercial organizations. So there's a lot of this going on. And I think, really, for me, there is a broader trend now that goes beyond any one individual site, and I think there are a lot of similarities across these sites that we can identify. What's going on there? On the one hand, is of course the motto of the Wikipedia: anyone can edit, anyone can actually become part of it, anyone can create content within these spaces. Again, perhaps for better or for worse, perhaps particularly looking at it from an educational perspective, we don't necessarily want all of these people just to be equal contributors, but that's really what these sites are built on, and we have to start working out what's going on there and what the benefits and problems of it are, perhaps. There's also something else, though, and this is really where we're going beyond the idea of traditional content production, I think, because if you look at something like the Wikipedia, for example, it's not a product in a traditional sense. The Wikipedia itself, the content of the Wikipedia, is not a product in a traditional sense. Because it is constantly changing, constantly evolving, constantly being revised, of course, by people going to the site. So what's happening there is not so much that you're looking at the 2007 edition or the March edition or the March whatever it is 22nd edition of the Wikipedia. You're looking just at whatever the latest edition, the latest edit actually has been of the particular piece of content that you're looking at. So the Wikipedia is actually not a product, not in the way that Britannica is a product or other sources of information that are published in distinct editions and distinct versions are products. What Wikipedia is actually a process, and the content that we're seeing is a very much a temporary artifact of that process, which might be different in the next 5 seconds, the next 5 minutes, the next 5 days. So there is not anymore that sense of a version, an edited version, a collection of approved materials, but simply just an ongoing, and often quite rapidly ongoing process, of which we might see the latest artifacts, or of course of which we can also see earlier artifacts by going down back through the history functions and so on. So we're moving away from the idea of a product in the sense that we've understood it in the industrial age, in the traditional age of production and consumption, perhaps. And in fact, again, because so many people are becoming active participants in this, the process of usage and production are increasingly interlinked and intertwined and intermingled in these environments. Even, like I said, just by using Amazon, you're actually producing the site. You're actually contributing to a further evolution of the Amazon site. By using Wikipedia, well, you might also already start to contribute to the ongoing revision of the site because your visits show up in the access statistics and so on. And of course, when you become actively involved in just changing a few comments here and there, or adding a few sentences or whatever else, you're certainly becoming very directly involved in the production of the site. So the sort of traditional distinctions that existed during the industrial age, if you like, of a particular group of people who were producers of stuff, a particular people who were distributors of stuff, and a particular group of people who were simply consumers of stuff whose wants and needs might have been monitored, of course, by the producers in order to produce more of what's sold, but who weren't really directly involved in the production process. That sort of distinction, that sort of trichotomy between these three different positions is very rapidly disappearing in an informational context. And I have to make that clear. I'm talking very much about informational products at this point. In a physical context, in the context of physical products, it's still quite different, but even there we're seeing some changes. So, I think really we have to start talking about this in different ways from the way that we've talked about these things in the age of production, if you like. I think the terms like production, terms like product actually don't quite apply, don't quite describe what's going on here. And I've started to operate with this term producage as a kind of a more hybrid mixture of production and use, really very much a, a mixture of production and use which can't easily be split apart anymore. They're two sides of the same coin now, I think, rather than really distinct processes that can easily be separated from one another. And of course, other people have started to talk about this as, well, commons-based peer production is the term that Yochai Benkler uses. There's this idea of a generation C of people who are involved in this, which Trend Watching came up with in the first place, and we've heard about the generation CX, I think, as well, in this conference already. So there are starting to be some concepts that are being thrown around to try and really describe what is actually going on here. And my research is really about very much about trying to map right across all these different domains what exactly is going on here. What are the common characteristics, whether we're dealing with open source or with the Wikipedia or citizen journalism or whatever else. I think we can actually identify some key common characteristics that are very much in place right across the board. So this is the list of the four key characteristics I've been able to come up with so far. And, I think if you look at them, I think they do apply pretty well right across all these spaces. Obviously, producer is very much community-based. It's based in, what some people have started to call crowdsourcing, for example. It's based in working with the wisdom of crowds, as another book title, of course, describes it. Rather than having a distinct group of hired people producing stuff, whether that's the editors and contributors to Britannica or whether that's the software engineers hired by Microsoft, rather than having that, you really rely on everyone to be able to become an active contributor to these spaces. And the idea is that the more people you get involved in this, the more likely it is that the product in the end, the outcome in the end, will be of good quality. The more eyeballs look at something, the better the results will be. That's the Eric Raymond model. At the same time, too, because you're working with large communities, the roles that individual people in these communities play is quite fluid. Some people might contribute very, very strongly to particular sections, particular pages on the Wikipedia, for example, and really just use the rest in a sense of being very much just users or almost consumers of this resource, because they don't know anything about quantum physics, but they might know very much about Sir Walter Scott. So they participate where it's appropriate for them to participate. And their level of participation might change depending on the particular need. So that's the community side, if you like. There's also the side of what's actually being produced, the content that's being produced here. Again, like I said, the content itself is actually in a perpetual state of unfinishedness, of being in further revision. The development is very much an evolutionary, an iterative development. It's actually, it reminds me very much of the idea of the palimpsest, because it's repeatedly overwritten, and of course also very strongly annotated in the margins. Again, if you look at Wikipedia, if you look at the discussion pages attached to any entry in the Wikipedia, you see often very long and very involved discussions about how a particular aspect should be described best. So it's very palimpsestic kind of development, which never reaches an endpoint. There's always something else that will be added, and always something else that will happen. And that's a very different form of content than what we're used to when we're buying the Britannica, when we're buying a newspaper, when we're buying a software product, which essentially tells us, hey, I'm finished. I was good enough to be published. So, you can safely buy me and use me now because I have gone through quality processes and so on. So the content is always unfinished, and that's something we, as users of this content, of course, we have to come to terms with as well, and be much more critical, if you like, of the quality of it and so on. And of course, all of this necessarily needs to be based on alternative forms of copyright, because the very collaboratively based development of content cannot work under traditional forms of copyright. It needs to be based in forms of Creative Commons or open source licensing and so on. And contributors very much need to understand that and need to permit that, of course, as they're working with it. In some cases, these issues are simply being ignored. That's perhaps the YouTube model at this point still, where, there's a great sort of, there's the white elephant in the room of who actually owns all this stuff to some extent still. But essentially, these processes of producers work on a basis that the content being produced is made available freely to all, with just a small number of limitations, such as not allowing anyone perhaps to commercially exploit it for their own good. And the reward that participants get is not so much that they're creating intellectual property, but that they're creating, recreating their own status, if you like, in the community by participating. So it's a merit-based community of producers. And the implications that all of this has, I think, really reach right across a very large number of areas. We've already seen, again, in open source, as one of the very early adopters, there's a whole cottage industry, and quite a powerful industry, by now, not just cottage industry, perhaps, that's emerged around open source. There are companies that are very much able to operate commercially within an open source software environment, for example. So there are new business models, there are new industry sectors even emerging around this. And I think we've seen this, obviously, with Google, which gives away a lot of its content for free as well. It's still one of the biggest companies on the U.S. Stock Exchange at this point. We're seeing, of course, also the emergence of new forms of content, of new forms of information, new sources of knowledge, for better or for worse. And we have to understand really the qualities and the problems, perhaps, inherent within these sources. New forms of content, new understandings of how content actually works. Again, this sort of shift from product to artifact, perhaps, needs to be something that the users of this content actually understand better, I think, as well. So they don't believe that whatever they see at any one point in the Wikipedia is necessarily the best piece of content that there could be. That they actually go back to the history and look at perhaps some of the earlier versions to see whether there's not something better that's lurking there that has been revised badly in the very recent past. We're seeing perhaps new forms of collaboration that are emerging. Again, we've talked a lot here about the use of wikis and blogs and Second Life and so on in educational environments as well. And, you know, a lot of this has, of course, emerged. A lot of people are experimenting with how to collaborate with their teams, maybe with their students as well, within these environments. And I think we're only at the start of really exploring this effectively. And this happens not just in education, it happens in science, it happens in intellectual endeavors, happens increasingly in artistic endeavors, of course, as well. Again, intellectual property I've kind of talked about already, and of course there's also a really different kind of merit economy, in a sense, the reputation economy that's starting to emerge around these spaces. Again, people participate not so much for direct financial gain, but in order to increase their social standing, their status, capital, perhaps, within these environments, from which they might, further down the track, still derive some kind of profit and some kind of reward, of course, still, too. At the same time, it's not all new. It's not all just, you know, new, totally new models, but we're maybe rediscovering also some of the older models that have been a little bit lost at the height of the industrial, commercialized industrial age. A lot of this is actually kind of harking back to very much open forms of academic, scientific research collaboration, for example, the free sharing of results within the academic community, perhaps. A lot of this goes back also to reputation-based environments, reputation-based communities. They're not just based on how much money you have, but how much knowledge you have as well, perhaps, and how important a part of your community you are. And of course, again, there's this whole question of the commons that has been rediscovered almost by people like Lawrence Lessig and so on, who are very much looking also at some of the very ancient models of common property, common resources that people have been using. So there's a lot of rediscovery, I think, going on there as well, of things that were perhaps sidelined very much during the late age of capitalism. Now, the question then really becomes, I think, well, one of the questions becomes for education, what do we want our graduates to be within this environment? Or maybe what are our graduates already within this environment and how do we deal with that? Again, you know, there's that idea of the Generation C, which trend watching, not neatly sums up under a number of three terms, content, creativity, the casual collapse of traditional institutions and traditional organizations as well, under this onslaught of new forms of content creation, new forms of economic, of commercial work as well, perhaps. The question of control. These people are still controlling the outcomes of their work, but in very different ways. And to some extent, celebrity. There are now people like the originator of Linux, for example, of the Linus Torvalds, who has become very much a celebrity of the open source movement, of course. And increasingly, again, there are ways to commercialize work in these spaces as well. So there is cash involved there as well. Now, I think we would probably want our graduates to be able to certainly understand what's going on within these environments, because they are playing an ever more important role, for better or for worse. And I think we probably also want to prepare them to be part of these environments, to take part in these environments, if they so choose. We don't necessarily want to push them into this and say this is necessarily where you have to go, but if they so choose, we would want them to have the skills and the capacity, I guess, to be active participants in these environments as well. And that's just to, off the top of my head, some ideas for particular areas of education where we want to prepare our graduates now. So if we're looking at IT, for example, IT education, we would want our students who are going to be software engineers now to understand open source works and understand how they might work and make a living from working within the open source community. Our students are going to be journalists. Maybe we need them to understand what citizen journalism is and does and how you engage as a professional journalist with these producers, with this other lot, basically. They're doing increasingly sophisticated citizen journalism outside of the journalism industry. Knowledge workers more broadly, perhaps. You know, we are now seeing the rise of wikis as knowledge development, knowledge sharing environments. So how do you really work effectively within this? How do you know when to use and when not to use it? And of course, artists as well. Well, how do you work, how do you collaborate within artistic spaces of this kind while still protecting your own reputation and your own intellectual property as well? These are just some areas, and there's plenty more, I think. But I think we need to really get our graduates to be able to work within these spaces. They still might want to choose not to, but at least they should be able to. So a few colleagues of mine and I have come up with this idea of the C4C, four crucial capacities, graduate capacities, I think, that people need to be able to work within these spaces. We've kind of tossed up a little bit whether we should call them literacies or capacities, but I think they actually go beyond the idea of literacy, although I don't necessarily want to get into that argument too deeply, but for the moment anyway, we're calling them capacities, and there's really these four capacities that I think are really crucial in this environment. One is an ability to be creative within these environments, of course, to be able to engage in this collaborative producer's work creatively. And by creative, I don't just mean artistic creation. I don't just mean the narrow form of creativity, but I mean quite a broad sense of content creation, if you like. And to really have kind of the understand why you or why other people might want to work in these environments as well. So it's about understanding perhaps some of the motivations behind it as well as the reasons perhaps not to in some cases. So the economic motivations, the social motivations, and the individual motivations as well that there are for participating in these spaces. There's a very strong aspect of collaborative capacity, of course, in this as well. You know, students, graduates, I think, need to understand when, where, and with whom to collaborate in these spaces, and when also to choose not to do so, because perhaps the collaborators available or the basic structures of these collaborative spaces aren't conducive to good participation, to beneficial participation. Understand the consequences of doing so as well. Again, for intellectual property, for reputation, and so on. You don't just want to jump onto any collaborative space and be part of that, but you really want to evaluate where is my time best spent? Where am I going to get the best returns? Where's you know, the community, the society, and so on is going to get the best returns out of participating in this as well. This also links quite directly already to critical capacities, I think. Which is both about actively participating in these spaces, but also about just critically evaluating the outcomes, the artifacts that emerge from these spaces as well, because again, this is also about just understanding how something like Wikipedia works, for example, to be able to understand, well, maybe I need to look at the history front as well, maybe I need to look at the discussion pages as well to understand what's been going on there, what's led people to this, to the producers of this particular artifact. How did people get to that, and was the process actually one of quality, or were there other problems involved in this? So evaluating the quality of the content, evaluating the qualities of and skills of the collaborators within these spaces as well. Also be critical of their own skills and abilities and capacities, of course, as well. And also critically, perhaps, not just critique for themselves, but also express that critique effectively for the benefit of themselves and these other people and spaces. And of course, all of this really is certainly based on a foundation of communicative capacity. And I think, obviously, we are very strong already on making sure that our graduates are effective communicators, but I think there's actually something about communicating specifically within these spaces that still needs to be further enhanced, because communication within these spaces is somewhat different now from other forms of communication. Certainly the technological features are different, but there's also something else, I think, going on that goes beyond simply what's determined by the technology itself. And in fact, there's kind of that question, I think, perhaps of really meta-collaboration, to collaborate about collaboration, to communicate about collaboration, even before you get involved directly in these producer spaces. So these are sort of four kind of core and crucial capacities, I think, that we certainly are seeing. Now, none of these are inherently new, obviously, but I think they need to be reimagined and reinvestigated for this user-led environment, for these user-led environments that we are seeing emerge. And in many ways, of course, it's quite simply a mission statement. I think what this does, hopefully reasonably well, is to outline these core capacities. But we also need to understand, well, in the first place, why would people want to get involved in these spaces? Why would we, as academics, why would our students want to pursue these capacities, want to build these capacities? So there's a question of the motivations underlying all of this. And, one aspect of this is also that really by looking at, I think, all of these different spaces as not so much a unified movement, but a movement with certain similarities right across the board, whether we're looking at software production or looking at other things, I think the framework actually helps to better understand this and not just focus on individual areas of education and try to build the capacities there, but I think they're actually much more core than that. They're actually much, much wider ranging right across the board than this. So I'll just, and how to now actually do this, that's really where I think I'll pass over the question to people who are much better qualified in this area. But I think education itself will really have to understand these environments, really understand how perhaps it might want to, engage with these environments. I think education can look at other forms of, well, dare I say, industries, which are in the process, the software industry, the journalism industry, the encyclopedia industry, who are all dealing with this challenge from user-led communities. And I think we need to start to think about, well, how do we engage with this, or are we just going to be in the same position that journalism is in, or software industry is in, of this new challenger coming along and just railroading right through us? This idea of the casual collapse that trendwatching talks about, that might be a fate that could befall us as well if we're not being careful, I think. So I'll leave it there. I will show you just very quickly this little graphic here, which came from a presentation by Todd Richmond in Annenberg a little while ago, who talks about that sort of the distance between producer and consumer shrinking through user-led environments, and the question of, well, does the distance between teacher and student actually shrink as well? This is the traditional transitional stage. Where are we going next from this? But I'm out of time.
Thanks so much, Michael.